At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Heads of state gather in London for Queen Elizabeth II's funeral. We'll look at where the royal family goes from here.
I think longer term, we're going to see a monarchy that is trying to be more cost efficient and more slimmed down. But it's a difficult balancing act because part of what makes this monarchy so special is the glitz and the glamour.
Plus, the EU deepens its conflict with Hungary and why family businesses are selling to private equity firms. It's Monday, September 19th. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. World leaders have gathered in London to pay their respects to the late Queen Elizabeth II. Signing his condolences, President Joe Biden paid tribute to the Queen.
What she gave is a sense of, maybe above all, the notion of service. We all owe something. There's something within our capacity to do that can make things, not just the world better, but your neighborhood better, your household better, your workplace better.
The state funeral is Britain's first since that of Winston Churchill in 1965 and is one of the biggest diplomatic set-piece events in the country's history, with foreign dignitaries, including French President Emmanuel Macron and Japanese Emperor Naruhito, in attendance. We'll have more on the day's events and what's next for the UK under the reign of King Charles III later in the show. President Biden has declared the COVID-19 pandemic to be, quote, over. Those comments made in an interview with CBS's 60 Minutes come as the Biden administration is promoting new vaccines to protect against prevalent COVID strains and seeking billions of new funding from Congress. In the same interview and responding to a question about Taiwan, Biden said U.S. forces could defend the island in the event of a Chinese invasion. The White House sought to clarify Biden's remarks to CBS News, saying U.S. policy toward Taiwan hadn't changed. The U.S. has a longstanding policy of strategic ambiguity regarding Taiwan, under which it has generally refrained from saying whether it would intervene directly. Biden also told 60 Minutes that he intended to run for re-election in 2024, but added it remains to be seen if that's a firm decision. The European Union is ramping up its financial pressure on Hungary's nationalist Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. On Sunday, the European Commission proposed freezing the equivalent of more than $7.5 billion in EU payments to Hungary, saying the country's weak democratic institutions could no longer safeguard those funds from corruption. Wall Street Journal senior reporter Drew Hinshaw has more.
So the EU is holding off on giving a big chunk of that money for now. However, Prime Minister Viktor Orban has something up his sleeve, which is that he opposes the sanctions on Russia, and the EU is going to need his vote in December and January when they attempt to renew those sanctions. So we are seeing a showdown that's going to play out for months to come.
Hungary has until November to pass enough anti-corruption reforms to address the EU's concerns. A Hungarian government spokesman said the government would fulfill its commitments. And we are exclusively reporting that grocery delivery company Instacart does not plan to raise much capital in its upcoming IPO and will instead have the vast majority of the listing come from the sale of employee shares. That is according to people familiar with the matter. The move could help the company recruit new talent and retain existing employees by giving them more ways to benefit from their shares. Instacart's planned IPO also bucks a trend of companies delaying listings amid concerns they won't get a good price in the current market. The private equity industry made its name by taking big corporations, well, private. But a shift is rippling across the industry now as those firms shift their focus to smaller targets in the form of America's family businesses. We're talking here about everything from car washes to consultancies and specialized manufacturers. Wall Street Journal private equity reporter Miriam Gottfried is here to help explain what is behind this shift. Hey, Miriam.
Hi.
So you know this space well. Small businesses often sell to larger ones. Family businesses stick around. Others rotate out of family ownership. So what then is really piquing your interest about this moment?
What really stands out to me about what's happening right now is that many family-owned businesses and small businesses are preferring to sell to private equity over selling to a larger corporation. As you said, it has been common, if your next generation of your family doesn't want to take over your business, to sell to a larger competitor. But now a lot of founders and families are looking at private equity as a more appealing option. And there are a couple of reasons why. One is that private equity is paying a lot of money for these businesses, in many cases more than what we would call a strategic, which would be a competitor business, would pay. And then another one is that in many cases, private equity firms are doing a lot to woo these family businesses, sometimes even by allowing the family members to remain executives at the company, allowing them to retain a stake in the company, and to have some sort of say over the future of the business.
Why is the private equity industry suddenly so interested in small businesses as opposed to some of its bigger targets in recent years?
Well, one thing about small businesses that makes them appealing to private equity is that they are untouched by another institutional investor. Private equity firms like to go in and they do their playbook to make the company more profitable, to make it grow faster, whatever their goal is for the company. When you have a family business, that's pretty much only been done by members of the family. You haven't had consultants from McKinsey come in. You haven't had professional investors come in and say, how can we make this better? So maybe you haven't been able to do some of the stuff that you'd like to do with the business. It's an untouched canvas.
And looking at this from the perspective of the family and small businesses, what kind of situation do they often find themselves in?
I think in many cases, people are realizing that their children don't want to take over the business. And the entrepreneur wants to get a good price for their business, and private equity is paying a big price. So this is creating a lot of wealth for America's small business owners. What it means for the employees could be something of a mixed bag. In many cases, firms are pledging to retain employees, and these are kind of growth deals. But anytime a business ownership transitions, there could be a big shakeup.
That was Wall Street Journal private equity reporter Miriam Gottfried. Miriam, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Coming up, as Brits bury their late queen today, where does the monarchy go from here? We'll look back on a historic week for the royal family and the United Kingdom after the break.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
As we mentioned earlier, the state funeral for Queen Elizabeth II is taking place today in London. Around a million people are expected to pay their respects for the late queen, who was Britain's longest-serving monarch, following 4 days in which hundreds of thousands queued for hours to see her lying in state. Wall Street Journal UK correspondent Max Colchester joins us now to help look back on the last 10 days of commemorations of the Queen and to turn our attention forward. Max, thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Luke.
We obviously knew the Queen's death would lead to a major public outpouring of support and put the monarchy under a microscope. Given that, what has surprised you, if anything, about how this has all transpired?
Well, what's been remarkable has been how everything really has gone to plan, largely. We've seen this 10 days of mourning that the nation has partaken in really roll out in a very dignified and orderly way. And the transition from Queen Elizabeth to King Charles III has been seamless. We've seen the new king and his family unite around the memory of the Queen. They've toured the country, they've attended numerous religious services, and it's being capped by this incredible event we're going to see in London, which will be one of the greatest diplomatic gatherings ever, actually, as hundreds of officials from around the globe file into Westminster Abbey to mark the passing of perhaps the world's most famous monarch.
And so by the end of today, I take it the Queen will have been buried. And will we, at that point, basically end the formal commemorations that have really been almost nonstop for the last more than a week.
We see not one but three services today to mark her passing. We see a state funeral at Westminster Abbey. We then see another service at St. George's Chapel in Windsor Castle, which is a smaller, slightly more private, but still filmed to the masses event where members of her household can join to pay their tributes. And then finally, there is a private family gathering, which isn't televised, where she is interred. And those are the three events we're going to see play out today.
Prince Charles, now King Charles, is on the throne. Is he already starting to define his reign? And if so, what does it look like?
So what we're seeing here is a new monarch who is more present and more visible than Queen Elizabeth. Charles, I think, has made sure that these 10 days have really been used to put him front and center in the public eye. He has been filmed repeatedly talking about his mother, repeatedly talking to heads of state and religious leaders in different corners of the United Kingdom. And also he's been a lot more informal than his mother. So we're seeing a monarch that's trying to move the monarchy forward a little bit and make it a bit more current with the times, while, of course, maintaining the pomp and tradition that makes the British monarchy so special.
And what about how he will oversee the costs of running the monarchy, costs which have at times in the past been a source of public frustration with the royal family?
I think longer term, we're going to also see a monarchy that is trying to be more cost efficient and more slimmed down. Prince Charles has made it known via his aides that he really wants to make sure that every member of that royal family that appears on the balcony at Buckingham Palace really is providing value to the British taxpayers who are paying for them. And that means working, and that means turning up to events and civic events and opening things and hosting dignitaries. And in terms of costs, yes, he will be under pressure in certain quarters to slim them down. But it's a difficult balancing act, because part of what makes this monarchy so special is the glitz and the glamour and the extraordinary displays that we're seeing. And these are expensive. And actually, the British people, they want to see the glitz and the glamour, the elaborate costumes, the pageantry that defines the monarchy here and is a reminder of the country's tradition. So it's going to be a slimmed down monarchy. Will it be much cheaper? I doubt it. Will people care? Probably not. But I think that is the tone that he's trying to set in the next few years.
And so what is next, Max? Is the royal family likely to fade out of the spotlight for a little bit, or will they be back on the world stage in some form before too long?
Yes, the main event that's going to happen at some point next year is the coronation, which will be another huge moment here. And again, will create a lot of buzz around the monarchy. And again, will place the new king front and center of the nation's consciousness. We'll see a holiday. We'll see, again, extremely elaborate pageantry. The whole family will be out in force again, and it will, I'm sure, be another amazing moment of great British pomp and ceremony. So we've got that to look forward to.
That was Wall Street Journal UK correspondent Max Colchester. Max, thanks so much as always.
Thanks, Luke.
And finally, after 70 years on the throne, Queen Elizabeth II isn't just ingrained in the hearts of many Brits. Her name and likeness are literally engraved on an estimated 29 billion coins and 4.7 billion banknotes. Everything from post boxes to chocolate wrappers, gin labels, and attorney business cards also bear her name. But that all has to change now to reflect the new monarch. And while the national anthem has already switched to God Save the King, Wall Street Journal reporter Elliot Brown says the Queen's image is likely to remain on currency for a long time to come.
It's been an incredibly long tradition that has been going on since, I believe, 9th century England, when you centralized the currency as the monarch, and then the commoners could actually see what the monarch looked like. So the Bank of England is the one that does this, and the broad expectation is that they will roll them out over some amount of time, probably just in line with their normal schedule for changing currencies. So it really depends how they're going to go about it. But for the past 70 years or so, the currency here has had Queen Elizabeth's face on it. And one day in the future, at some point, it will all have King Charles's face on it.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.